So, Jonathan, this has been so much fun. It's really a delight to be a part of this series and be interviewing these great speakers. And I hope that everybody's enjoying it as much as we have been. And I think about the big opportunity for homeschoolers, and particularly those with high school students, and wanted to, in this session, talk about some of the themes that have been coming up, being addressed by these various speakers, and talk about some ways that parents and students can better navigate those high school years and really become more efficient and maximize them. It's a passion area for me. It's something, as a previous homeschool graduate, as I know you are as well, graduated 22 years ago. I feel really old.
Yeah, you didn't necessarily have to share that, you know, so.
Yeah, so, you know, I look back on those homeschooling years with a lot of appreciation, as well as some interest in, you know, hoping families will avoid some of the mistakes that I think we made, and I see current families making. So I'm really excited about this topic and think there's a lot to talk about.
So Woody, it's been, what is it? It's been about 8 years ago or something like that I first heard you speak on some of these topics and some of these things. And just reading from the introduction that we had on this session, it says, what if you could graduate college when you were supposed to be graduating high school? Let me read that again. What if you could graduate college when you were supposed to be graduating high school? How cool would that be? Now, I know almost a decade ago when you said that, people were like, that is the craziest thing I've ever heard. Like, what are you talking about? And, you know, almost a decade later, I'm not so sure that that's still not kind of a crazy thing to make, right? I mean, we have a friend of ours that would call that a pattern interrupt, right? Like, people already assume that you're going to graduate high school and then college. And so when you drop this line like, hey, I can help you graduate from college, but at the same time you're graduating from high school, people go, what did you just say? So let's just stop right there. What did you just say, Woody? Like, how does that compute? How does that go together? Like, I know we're going to talk about some details here, but just first unpack that for me. Like, is that just a bit of marketing copy that got slapped up there? Or are you serious when you talk about graduating college about the same time you're graduating high school? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's really crazy. But when people understand the history of high school and how it came to America and, you know, sort of how the whole education system that we call normal today originated, then it puts in perspective why this idea of combining high school and college makes so much sense, and why in reality you can, as we say, dual credit on steroids. You can actually earn an entire degree while you're still in high school. And we've helped, you know, you and I have helped 5,000-6,000 students over the past years do that and be very successful at it. We both know the stories. We watch it, and I think that what we're going to talk about in this session is, as I said earlier, really an extension of some of the philosophical ideas that have been presented by other speakers. And that would be things like, you know, raising the bar on expectation, not confining ourselves to what the world says is normal. We've heard that from multiple speakers now. We're also hearing this idea of balancing academics with life experience and the importance of getting outside of the classroom and getting the hands-on training. And so, you know, while this session may sound like it's very much focused on academics and degree and trying to cram it all in before a student's age 18 or 19 years old by the time they graduate from high school, that's really not the emphasis here. And I want our listeners to know that. The real passion is to help people understand the opportunities and to maximize their time. So there are incredible inefficiencies in the high school and transition to college process, not only as far as how much money people pay for a college degree and how much time they spend and, you know, all the partying and everything that goes on, but really just the actual track of, you know, what's considered normal is inefficient. So in this session, I hope to get into some of those details and really unpack it for families.
Yeah, so you said a couple interesting things that I want to kind of pick up on. But something you didn't say explicitly, but kind of is laying there, is you talked about inefficiencies in high school. You said that, and you said some other things. And, you know, it occurs to me that before we even talk about the college aspect of things here, maybe we should talk about the high school aspect of things. So I have a bit of an inside track here. I mean, I know this is something you're passionate about and something you've been studying for years. And so coming from that background and knowing that, and based on what you said here, let me lead you on a little bit and say, tell me what's going on in high school. Like, what, when we think of traditional high school, whether that's traditional high school, like going to a public or private school, or just traditional high school, like getting the subjects covered in a homeschool situation, break that down for me. Like, what's really going on in high school, and what are some different ways we can think about that, or maybe some new perspective in sort of thinking about that?
Yeah. So let's talk about a little of the history here. As a student of history back in my high school years, I always ask my parents, so why is it that a founding father is graduating from high school at age 14, 15 years old? And why is it taking so much longer to do that today? You know, where the average age is 22 to 25 years old for an undergraduate degree. And the response I got from my mom was, well, Woody, they studied harder than you do. And, you know, she was right. I mean, they were fluent in Greek, Latin, Hebrew at age 12, 13 years old. I mean, these kids were pretty disciplined and focused. But the reality is that students 250 years ago, and even all the way up to students in the 1920s and 1930s, were not forced to go to high school. There was no such thing as high school up until the early 1900s. And when high school was first introduced, it was really designed for those that wanted to pursue trades. If you wanted to go into vocational work, a plumber, electrician, carpenter, you went to high school. If you wanted a liberal arts education, you went directly from grade 8, you know, about the equivalency of that, into college and university. So, you know, we've added an extra 4 years of high school that we've now considered normal. And, you know, when you look at that and you say, okay, so what happened there? And, you know, what are some of the overarching trends that are, you know, creating this dynamic? You see that back during the 1920s and 30s, there was a focus on those trades, you know, just as there is right now. There's a real shortage of trade laborers, you know, electricians, plumbers, carpenters, welders, you name it. And so our country was moving through this transition from, really, even a little bit broader than this, they were transitioning from the one-room schoolhouse, which had been, you know, thousands of, over 2,000 of these schools all over the country. And, you know, Little House on the Prairie, Wind Calls the Heart, that kind of look, you know, where you got, I don't know, 30 kids ages 6 to 16 or 14 crammed in a room together. You had older kids teaching younger kids. All the way up until about the early 1900s, that was what was done in America. You know, whether you lived here in Texas or in Virginia, you know, that was a predominant mode of education. And so before that, it was really homeschooling, you know, like our founding fathers' time frame. Most of them were homeschooled. There were not real, you know, public models of education as you might think of it today. And so anyway, you had this 1800s, 1900s, this whole, you know, one-room schoolhouse concept. And you saw American education on the significant incline. Competency, retention of information, literacy, you know, all these statistics were on the rise. But in the early 1900s, there was a group of industrialists that got together. And this is, I'm going to cover a few of the highlights of one of my favorite books. It's called The Underground History of American Education. And it was written by John Taylor Gatto, New York State's Teacher of the Year. A really insightful work. It'll make the hairs on your spine, you know, the back of your neck kind of stand up. Anyway, he details how there were four industrialists that funded the creation of American public education as we know it today. The grade segregated classrooms, which was this transition from the one-room schoolhouse where you had older kids teaching younger kids and, you know, great things were happening. Transition to dividing everybody up by grade, which you know, he talks about the education, you know, interested people got behind it because they like consistency. They liked, you know, the ability to sort of batch things. It made the process easier for a teacher than having to, you know, cover ages 6 to 16. So the teachers got behind it. You had the government that got behind it because they could standardize exams and they could, you know, sort of enforce that education was actually taking place. But you had the business leaders of the day. And we talk about people like Henry Ford, Andrew Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller. These were the kinds of people that were funding this big, massive transition. And the interesting thing to note there is that most of those men, in fact, all of them, they were industrialists. They needed millions of workers to work in their assembly line, you know, factories and do mundane tasks all day long. And yes, they did need skilled laborers. You know, American industrialism was on the explosion. It was on the rise. And, you know, we need lots of people to do those jobs. But what we find is that high schools were introduced during this transition from the one-room schoolhouse to the grade-based school approach as well. And when high school was introduced, it was introduced for that trade focus. And that's why even today, remnants of shop class, home economics, you know, auto mechanics, those kinds of things are still relics of the past that are, you know, every day being pushed out of school, being pushed out of high schools across America. But they're really the roots of what American high school was originally created to be. And so I could talk a lot about the, you know, conspiracy of these industrialists and, you know, some of the brainwashing and all the way down to the same bell sounds as were played in the high school periods were played in the factories. And it was really about conditioning of the mind. Whether you believe in that or not, it is kind of interesting to look at. And you see how some of these things, either there's some validity to this. But I think the most important takeaway from this is to say, how do we help a student be prepared for life? That's what education should be about. And when we're thinking about that, we need to think, is the model of education that was developed in the 1920s and 1930s, you know, this grade segregated textbooks, cramming facts and figures, that whole approach, is that the best approach to be equipping a student for the 21st century that we live in today? And I think some of our speakers are absolutely saying no. Like, parents, beware. Students, beware. This is not going to work well for you. That, you know, companies are not after knowledge. I mean, knowledge is essential. It's not to be minimalized, but it's really soft skills, character, creativity, communication, collaboration. Those are the things that are important. And I think one step deeper, and I'm sorry to monologue here, one step deeper is to say, we really, as parents of a high schooler, need to be aware of a student's purpose, their trajectory, you know, where they're headed, why they're here. We need to be understanding the flexible options that a high school program, homeschool high school, provides us, and to be really taking advantage of that and getting students out of the house and getting life experience. You've heard a couple of speakers really talk about that. I interviewed Brett Harris yesterday, and he talked about his own experience of being very eclectic during his high school years and, you know, sort of anathema in, you know, the world that he lived in, grew up in, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But how important that was to his life to take a little bit less of a focus on the traditional academics as we know it today and more of a focus on life experience. And, you know, what the interesting thing and the research shows us is that students learn by doing, and that's the best way to learn something. And so what this is really about is helping students become what we call lifelong learners, helping them take ownership, be responsible for, be personally driven to learn, to discover, you know, to take ownership of their studies. That's really what we want to be about. So I've monologued for a bit there, and I'm sorry, but I think a little bit of the history of the high school, how it came to be, even the remnants of it today, and this reality that all the way up until about 1930, you could go directly from grade 8 into college or university. You didn't have to go to high school. In fact, there was no such thing as high school really before that. So we've added an extra 4 years of education that was never meant to be there before. And the last point I'll make in this introduction is really to say the first 2 years of college, what we call the gen eds, are well recognized, well known to be a review of high school. You know, this is something that your math, your English, your science, you know, your basic gen eds, the things that your students are doing in their high school years, it's all the same things they'll do during the first 2 years of college. There are a couple of notable exceptions to that. An engineering degree would be one. But by and large, all the other subjects, it's a total repeat. You know, Algebra 2 in high school is the same thing as College Math 101. English in high school is really the same thing as English in college. In history, it's not like they just change the words and make them harder between high school and college. It's the same thing. So when parents are aware of that, it kind of opens their mind up to say, okay, wow, I can do a lot more here. And I would say even the public school, you know, counterparts are well aware of this. And that's why the Department of Education says that by year 2024, 50% of American high school students will have an associate's degree by the time they graduate from high school. So we're not crazy. We're just saying, hey, if you're aware of everything, you could take that one step further.
Well, let me take a chance to kind of summarize that, Woody, because I think that that's really interesting. I think maybe the first thing that is kind of interesting is that it's really easy, and this happens at all kinds of things, to kind of think that, well, it's like this because it's always been like this. Like, this is just the way it is, right? And I think you're making a really good point to say, no, actually, that high school didn't always work the way high school works now. And it wasn't, this wasn't something that just sort of existed for eternity, that there were big changes and big shifts. And this is different. But I think practically, if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is like, and you said this several times, that eighth grade used to go right into college. And so what sort of happened was that the first couple years of college drifted into high school, right? So that then people could just go to high school and go to the factories and work and things like that and sort of have that all compressed. And yet at the same time, college didn't drop those 2 years. And so all of a sudden we got an extra, you know, 2 years are put in there or more where people are kind of coming in and saying, you know, before we just went straight in and now we're kind of doing that. And then we get to college and we're sort of redoing that. And I think the really interesting thing you noted there at the end is that there's almost a reversal that's happening almost in a market-driven type of way where you say people are going to graduate with associate's degrees. And so all of a sudden that gives some real context to this whole idea of combining high school and college. And I think that's important because I think it's really challenging and sometimes tempting to think that combining high school and college is only for geniuses. It's only for super advanced, really academically hard-charging kids. And you're saying it's a little different. So I want to do two things here, Woody. I want to make sure that we cover like how you do that. Okay, we understand the why. We understand the background of that. But we want to take time to get your expertise. Okay, I'm convinced. How do I actually do that? But you said something else several times in that, when you were talking last time, which is life experience and things like that. So let's first just assume, so audience, just rest with me for a minute and say, okay, we can do this. This is something that happened before and it can happen again. And then let's just make another assumption, say we are doing this. Okay, so we're getting that kind of flexibility back. So before we go on and you tell us about how we do that, Woody, just take a break and tell us, you know, what would you suggest we do at that time? Like if we are kind of combining that and we're getting some flexibility and we're getting some free time because we're saving some time, what is the most effective thing we can do with that time that'll really prepare our students to be successful?
Yeah, I said earlier that purpose discovery is really important during this time period. You know, you and I talked about this in an interview we did yesterday as well, that it is quintessentially important for a parent and student to be talking about purpose-related topics in their high school years, that the thought of sending them off to college to figure it out at college is not working. The statistics don't show that students actually do figure it out. 80% of people do something different than what they majored in, and we have students changing majors multiple times throughout their college experience, which costs both student and parent a lot of money. You know, it's a bad place to be figuring out what you want to do in life at $40,000 or $50,000 a year. So, you know, I think that's the most important thing is that there's active conversations about this. Johnny, what are you enjoying? What are you not? What do you like to read about? You know, if you could do anything without fear of failure, what would it be? You know, where have you seen God at work? You know, those types of questions are things that should often be happening between the ages of 12 and, you know, 18 years old. And hopefully much more there than at the college level. Because at college, it's just, I think it's too late. It's at least you're going to have some inefficiencies. So conversations about the topic and also testing it out, life experience, you know, getting outside of the classroom. Yesterday, we talked in our session about how important it is to do internships. And, you know, one day in an attorney's life cured me for life of law. And yeah. That was at age 16 years old. And, you know, had I not done that, I would have gone through the traditional track of college and law degree and, you know, had all this debt and, you know, gotten out in the actual profession and said, whoa, this is not at all what I was thinking. So we've heard a lot of speakers talk about life experience being really important. And I think to your question, and I'm sorry to have taken so long on it, but to your question, there is an opportunity to be more efficient with education. And yet at the same time, we're saying, with that efficiency, let's redeem the time for life experience. Let's give ourselves a real leg up on the competition. And we heard speakers talk about that degrees in and of themselves aren't the key to life and that people need something more than that. That's why there's a huge shift to the badge-based learning and credentials and, you know, something more than just a degree. Because everybody has a degree, but that doesn't actually mean that somebody can do something. So, you know, life experience is something that I would be heavily focused on. So, you know, if you have a daughter that's interested in becoming a, you know, owner of a bakery or getting into photography, or I've just thrown out random examples, maybe a guy that's interested in computers and technology and coding, you know, let's find somebody that's doing that in our community, somebody that we can trust, and just go shadow them, spend time with them, you know, take an afternoon a week that's set aside, you know, for a year, and, you know, that life experience is gained through that. Even if it's volunteer, that's the huge value. And I've heard you talk about in other pieces that you've done that the best way to get a job is volunteer and just stick your foot in the door and, you know, you'll end up with a job by the time you're done because they can't refuse you because you're so winsome and, you know, your character and your work ethic and all these things will just be so predominant in our culture today and it'll really stand out. So anyway, that life experience is very important. I think that as far as the academics go, what I'm really talking about is understanding that the current model of education, the grade-based model of education, what we call the conveyor belt model is another word for it, it produces frustrated, exasperated, and discouraged stuck feeling students. If I could talk about my own experience, I was a poor high school student, B and C grade at best. I was really unmotivated in my studies. I was pretty driven in my entrepreneurial side. I'd like to start a lawn mowing business or window washing, nothing crazy, but I was a hardworking guy. But when it came to studies, I didn't see the relevancy of it. I didn't understand how it all worked together. And, the thought of kind of repeating that at college just really was frustrating to me. In fact, that's one of the reasons I took a gap year that was supposed to be just one and ended up being 8 years and really, launched some of my own story of how Unbound came to be as feeling way behind at age 25 and needing to start on my degree, which I earned in 18 months for a total cost of about $10,000 from the state university. So we think about all that, when we see this combining of high school and college together, and we see maybe some different strategies for the way that we approach learning, so getting off the conveyor belt system, the grade-based system, and really personalizing education to the students, which we'll cover here in just a second, what we're seeing is an exponential love of learning. We're seeing I see the relevancy, I get it, I've been out in the real world, I see why this is important, and the whole experience of high school is significantly improved. And on the flip side, you see encouraged and excited, self-driven, self-motivated students. You can't help stop a student that's got half their degree or three-quarters of their degree in high school that's maybe 16, 17 years old. They're like unstoppable. I mean, they're so excited about beating the norm and being above average, even though, as you said earlier, these are normal kids with normal kind of psyche and, maybe academic ability. We're all just normal people, but it's the way that we go about it that means so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and I appreciate you kind of talking about that and talking about the possibilities, because it might make sense to go the other way and say, well, let's show you how to do this high school and college combined, and then let me show you what you can do with it. But I wanted to kind of have our audience sort of get an appetite for, like, why we do this, because in order to combine high school and college, you have to think differently. And that involves a bit of a risk. It involves sort of doing things differently. It involves learning some new things. And I want to kind of just plant that seed and say, this is worth it. It's worth it for your students. It's worth it for you. Because the trade-off here can be really significant in terms of life experience you can get, the kinds of internships you can get, the kinds of opportunities and experiences your child can get, the skills that they can master, those kinds of things. When you find this flexibility and you find this kind of extra time and you kind of do this combination, then there's a whole world of new opportunities that open up. So, okay, so we're convinced that we're not, right, at this point. And so then the question is, all right, fine, that this is a pattern interrupt. This is kind of like, wait, I can graduate college same time I graduate high school. How does that work? You've explained to me the historical context of why this actually makes sense. It's something that actually happened before, and in some ways it's happening again. So, okay, I bought that. I'm now convinced. I see the advantages, the kind of abilities my student can have and things they can do and experience if I get this pulled off right. But this is really difficult, right? I mean, this has got to be extremely complicated, and there's got to be 10,000 things I've got to know here. Or how does that work? Like, what's the essential stuff I need to know, Woody, if I'm like, okay, I want to do this. How do I go about this? Where do I even start?
Yeah. So there are three major dual credit options that are popular today. The first one is community college. 46% of students across America start at community college. It's local. It's cheap. But it's not necessarily known to be the best place to learn. And in most cases, would be considered more of an R-rated environment as far as the things that your kids will be exposed to by their peers or even by the professors themselves. So while it's cheap and it's local and it has those advantages going for it, it's not always our favorite. Another option is competency-based exams, things like the CLEP test, the SST exams, AP test. Now, this is what a lot of public high school students use, particularly the AP exams, and it's been around for over 40 years. These are competency-based exams that basically prove proficiency in a subject area. Now, there's nothing wrong with these exams. They're very economical. In fact, the CLEP test, as an example, you can take them for $100 and you can earn up to 12 college credits. That's a tenth of a degree right there in one test for a few of these exams. Most of them are 3 or 6 credits. We are actually experts at the CLEP test. We've helped thousands of students use CLEPs to earn college credit. I guess a downside to CLEPs is that there is a limited number of regionally accredited schools that accept CLEP or accept them at a significant level. And so you often run into transfer credit policy issues with the CLEP exams. We've more recently with Unbound shifted over to online courses. We have over 400 courses now that students can take. We've tried to get the price point down on them with volume, but these are high quality, great courses that are really a better learning experience, are more self-paced. You know, you watch the videos, click the next button, fill in the blanks, and they have much better transferability. In fact, at Unbound, students taking our courses will guarantee 100% transferability to our courses. So, you know, those are the three: community college, competency-based exams, CLEPs, APs, those and the like, and then online courses. And my favorite is the online courses because they transferred over 1,000 schools, and you know, we're really we've shifted our focus to that. So let's talk about you know, really what this means. So we talk about an immersion modular approach to study, which is really a different way to view the high school years and the actual scheduling of studies. The average student today in college or high school studies 7 to 9 subjects a day. And so there's constantly shifting gears, thinking about the new topic. You know, when I was in my high school years, I had to flip back in my book a couple pages and try to remember where I was yesterday, particularly math was one of those examples. And, you know, it just felt
most
like
what I did math, actually. Yeah. So
it felt like I was constantly having to review, and I wasn't really able to get my arms around it. I was just, again, I was a B and C grade student. I actually hated reading all the way through my high school years. I could count on my hand the number of extra books that I read just for pleasure reading. I didn't like to read, and the study just didn't come easy to me. One new strategy that we'd like to introduce is this strategy of limiting the number of subject areas down to 2 or 3 at most. And it's interesting, the Gates Foundation, Bill and Melinda Gates, are spending lots of money kind of testing this model. There's a series of private schools across the country that are using this, what's called immersion approach to study, where it's, you know, 2 to 3 subjects at a time. And what you'll find happens is much better retention, comprehension of the information, excitement for the learning. You know, when basically what you're doing is you're saying, hey, you only have to manage a couple of things at a time versus all these things at a time. Therefore, you can put all your energy into these couple of things. So we recommend a daily schedule being do math and English the way everybody else does it. Don't do anything different. That's just follow the normal prescribed path for math and English. And English, I mean writing. So, you know, IEW or whatever curriculum you use for your writing, that's what I'm suggesting there. And then for all other subjects, history, science, politics, government, economics, you know, all the other things that you might do throughout a high school journey, study it one subject at a time. So really get your lots of time on it. Spend 4 or 6 hours a day on, you know, one of those subject hours areas. So you're still going to get the required number of hours per subject, but the way that you're getting that is more in a compressed time period. And as a result of the compression, the brain is much better able to comprehend it, get its arms around it, feel like it understands the context of it. You'll find yourself, you know, looking for that information everywhere you turn. You're like, oh yeah, they're talking about that. Now I see that. You're watching a Netflix documentary about it. You're, you know, go find a book on it. You know, like everything just starts, you know, coming in and gelling and crystallizing, and kids get it. And so this is an approach that we've used, particularly for the high school years, and we've seen significantly better understanding, love of learning, but also a much improved scheduling and ability to take in lots of information in a more compressed time period. So it really helps with the time that's required to complete a degree. Anyway, that's the first thing, is the immersion modular approach, which is you know, really the suggested daily schedule. And I hope that we have a visual up here so you can see what we're talking about there.
So let's just stop there for a second. So you're talking about combining this and how we do it. And you say, look, there's three kind of primary ways to do this. You can do community college, and there's some possibilities there. Lots of people do that, but there are also some drawbacks in terms of quality, environment, and things like that. You can do competency-based exams, and there's a possibility there, but you run into some technical difficulties there. You have transfer problems and things like that. And then you have online courses, which there's been an explosion of online courses in the last 10 years. It's been big remodel for Unbound. You know, we used to use a lot of competency-based courses, and we've really switched to online courses because they give us a little higher quality, and we also give us advanced transferability. But then I think what you're saying is that there's some different ways to think about this. And I want to bring this up, Woody, because I think what happens is people are often like, you know, okay, well, I'm going to do online courses, which is the exact same way I do courses someplace else. I'm just going to get the, instead of reading a book or sitting in front of a classroom, I'm just going to get it from the screen, right? And I think you're saying something sort of fundamentally different here is that, okay, so first of all, the model, the vehicle to really do this combination that really helps is online courses, right? And before we go any further, when you say online courses and we're combining high school and college, tell me specifically the kinds of courses that you're talking about. Like, you know, what subject specifically are we talking about? And then let me come back and ask you another question about online courses before we go forward. So what courses are, you know, say, okay, well, combine high school and college. How do I do that? Like I'm taking English through this curriculum I bought for homeschool, and then I'm taking an online course in English, or I'm doing Saxon math, and then I'm also, how does that work? So help me break that down.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. As I was sitting here thinking about what I just said, I really feel like I didn't cover that well. So what we're talking about here is, remember that the first years of college are a review of high school.
Right.
So all of your typical high school subjects that you're covering are going to be the same things that you're doing at the college level. So if you keep that in mind, then you're thinking, okay, when my student completes this high school subject, or when they're doing it, we need to be doing it at the college level. So everything is focused on college, not high school.
So you're not talking about doing this twice. You're talking about doing this once, but for all the marbles. That's what we're kind of talking about here, right? Like this isn't like, okay, I'm going to do English and then I'm going to do AP English and then I'm going to do college English. You're talking about I'm going to do English and get college credit for it, right?
Yeah, which is even all the more crazy because what happens here is we don't have to worry about SAT, ACT, all the stress that's involved in, you know, these one-shot attempts at getting a great scholarship for life that's going to get you in a good school that, you know, is going to have bearing on your entire trajectory and that's it. You know, like we spaz out about those kinds of preparatory exams. And I would suggest to you that most schools are actually pulling away from those today, undervaluing the actual worth of those types of assessments. But anyway, yeah, in this case, we're able to earn college credit in high school and do it at a significant scale so that by the time that you show up at a college campus, you don't even need an SAT or ACT. You've already proven to the school that you can do college work because you've got 60 to 75 credits, 50 to 75% of your degree already under your belt. And, you know, earned and proven. And this also helps with the high school transcript where, you know, there's an equivalency of for every college credit, it's worth a half a high school credit. And, you know, that's just something, kind of a simple rule of thumb that a family can keep in mind and be able to mark something as, yeah, we've done our high school, but we've proven that at a college level by having a college level transcript that says, you know, got a X score on this subject area. So, Jonathan, what we're talking about is every subject a student is studying in high school, aiming it for the college level. So there's really two approaches towards earning college credit in high school. One approach is to use homeschool curriculum and finish the subject, and at the end of it, take an exam. Let me give an example. You go through Apologia Biology or Apologia Chemistry. You then sit for the CLEP exam, which you go to a local testing site and you pay about $100, and you can earn up to 6 college credits from that biology CLEP test at a college level. Now, that's a great play that makes a lot of sense. We've been doing that with homeschool students for many, many years. About 14 years ago, we started doing that. The other way is to really replace the high school with college, and that is forget the homeschool high school curriculum and rather bring in college-level coursework, either an online course or a community college, to take college-level content and work in the high school period.
So let me just take a look at that. So because I'm thinking about how to practically do this, right? And this, you know, for me, this isn't just academic, right? I've got high school kids and so students and sort of thinking this through. So either way, what we want to do is we want to start thinking about the fact that this is possible, right? Like even if we think about the back end of high school, you know, the junior and senior years, maybe the freshman and sophomore years, we're setting this up, but there's some overlap there. And so when we think about that, maybe the really critical piece here is just a mindset change. To say, hey, maybe the whole way through high school, but if I'm a little less ambitious than that, at least junior and senior years, I want to make sure that whatever we're doing, whatever subject we're in, we're actually doubling that up with college credit. And I'm going to either do that, I'm going to double it up through an exam, I'm taking it afterwards, or I'm going to double it up with a course. Now that requires me to sort of think ahead of time a little bit and think about instead of buying English curriculum at the homeschool convention this year, I'm going to actually sign up for a college course. And so Talk to me a little bit about that, right? Because I'm thinking, if I'm a parent, and I am a parent, listening to this, I've got two concerns. One is, really, my kid's going to be able to do college level stuff? Like, is that even possible that my 16-year-old is going to be able to jump into a college class once they get blown away with the content there? And so address that fear for me. And the second is, like, how do I go about doing that? Like, how do I go about finding those courses that, you know, do I just kind of Google English 101, or like, how do I sort of make that stuff fit together?
Yeah. So the first one, you know, a high schooler doing college level work, you know, are they ready for it? Are they prepared? But I just go back to what we've said earlier, and that is the first years of college are the exact same information your student's covering in high school. So everything you're doing at high school level is the same as they'll do at college.
So I know I've heard you say that, Woody. I know you've said that a couple of times, but I just want to make sure we're clear, because I know that that may be true, but that's certainly not the perception, right? The perception is that you go to college and that college is this massive step up. So you're saying through your experience, through facts, that, you know, when we're talking about the kind of biology I would do in high school and Bio 101, which is a typical gen ed in almost every college, right? That you're saying that the material covered there is substantively the same, that this is very much, I mean, there may be some differences, but for the most part, we're looking at the same kind of material. I just want to be clear that is indeed what you're saying, right? That an average student, if they can handle this in high school, is basically going to be able to handle the same content in college that looks a lot the same. Did I get that correct?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's really a sad story on American education. This is why kids get to college after just having gone through this information. They get to college and they're really bored to tears for the first couple of years. That's why a lot of kids get involved in sports and partying and, you know, really set some bad habits of gaming and, you know, all sorts of things that go on those first 2 years of college during the gen eds. They kind of almost take a step back, you know, slow life down because they've already, quote, covered this stuff before. And it is, in almost every case, a review of exactly what they covered in their high school. So
I've got, you've convinced me it's the same stuff, so my kid can handle it. So then how do I find this, right? Like, how do I, let's use American history as an example, right? So, or maybe Western civilization is a better one. Almost every degree requires Western civilization in college, right? And every high school requires some sort of Western civilization. So how do I go about, if I go this online course route, where exactly do I find Western, you know, civilization for 3 college credits? How does that look and how does that work?
Yeah, so I would suggest that you first pick a school that you like, that you respect, maybe a school in your community, in your area, a school that you value the kind of instruction that you think you'll be getting. And I would suggest that some subjects are a little bit more innocuous than others, at least as far as the worldview. I think worldview permeates all things. But just as an example, a math class, you're probably not going to be worried about the philosophy of the teacher, professor, and, you know, the kind of content your student's going to get, as maybe you would be a Western Civ or probably something more along the lines of economics or government, or, you know, you're just going to have just desperately, well, that's the word, or broadly different opinions on that. So first of all, pick a school that you trust for taking a course. You can go online on the website. You can find the school, their catalog. You can see when those classes are available. You know, think about traditional college schedules. So they start up in August, September, and, you know, first semester is going to run through December, and the next semester starts, the spring semester typically starts in January. Kind of follows a more normal high school schedule, but, you know, they break it in half, so you can take classes at those two points. But there are a lot of classes that you can take anytime you want. They're even self-paced. So back to that immersion approach I was talking about earlier, where you're limiting the number of subjects down, you're compressing it, you're really going after it, you're trying to maximize your brain space and your potential, then you would even want to check a little further to see if there's the ability to work at a student's pace. In other words, you know, don't have the schedule of the class slow a student down. Like, if they're taking off and they're going, like, let them work through it. And, you know, that's one of the things I think Unbound courses are most known for, is they are self-paced and they are flexible and they really work ideally with a homeschooler schedule. So you want to go on vacation? No problem. You want to burn through it? No problem. And, you know, when I say burn through it, I think that has a bad stereotype to it. I don't mean cheating or, you know, not studying. I mean getting the same number of hours in as everybody else, but doing it in a more compressed time period, which is
right because you're focusing on one subject. So back to where we kind of started with all this before I sort of sidetracked you a little bit, is that you're saying like one of the key strategies is like, okay, so you can combine these two things. This is the same content. My kid can handle this. Find a school I trust. Look for an online option. Be able to put those things together. But then you're saying one of the strategies to handle with this. Because, you know, if I'm a parent, I'm looking here and go, okay, so I've got to sign up for, you know, 9 online courses this fall for my kid's junior year. And you're saying, no, don't do that. You're saying sign up for 1 online course and then have my kid do math and writing and this and Western civilization. Is that right? Like, in other words, just concentrate that one course. And they could burn through it, not because they're somehow getting less information, but because instead of taking one course as 1 of 9 with a few hours a week or whatever, they might be spending 8 hours or 6 hours or 4 hours a day, you know, and then cumulative by week and cumulative by month, and all of a sudden that time frame gets really compressed. And yet you're saying the research says that the time frame's compressed, it gets more efficient, it's probably fun, more easy for the kid, but you're saying this actually, you know, the Gates Foundation and others are finding that this actually sticks better, goes in our brain better. Is that, did I summarize that fairly? Did I get that correct?
You nailed it. Exactly right. Yep.
So this is pretty fascinating, right? So combine high school and college, it's the same level stuff. So kind of remove that fear, find an online class. There's a couple ways to do this, but online classes may be one of the most effective. And you said something else really interesting, Woody, is you said a self-paced course. So I know a lot of people think online class is basically the same class just recorded and on a screen. But I think what you're saying is that, you know, the whole structure of the class looks very differently. So I know, of course, that a lot of Unbound courses are self-paced. So, and we're not the only ones that have self-paced. We wouldn't patent that or anything. But what exactly is a self-paced course? Like, just give me a little bit of a, you don't have to give me all the details, but exactly what do you mean by self-paced course? What's that look like?
Yeah. So the research shows that when you allow a student to learn at their own pace and schedule, that the level of learning is significantly improved. And so I think this really flies in the face of the traditional conveyor belt model where, you know, you're covering all these subjects and it's on this prescribed path and you got to do it exactly the same way everybody else does. And what I'm trying to say more than anything is don't follow a prescribed path. Recognize that two students, a boy and a girl, as an example, are totally different the way they're going to learn and their abilities. And even comparing two guys together, I had a 2 year younger, better looking, smarter brother that was always taking off on things when I was struggling. And I was, you know, my mom was a public school teacher before homeschooling us. She was like, Woody, what's wrong with you? She hadn't even tested for learning disabilities. And, you know, it's just the reality was that I learned different things in different ways than my brother did. And I think that when we recognize that students do learn independently and they need that flexibility to personalize to themselves, that we're going to see a much better end result. Students will be happier. We'll get through it faster. You know, the whole experience will be better. And so in the self-paced world of college education, you're seeing this newer trend, which I say newer, it's been 10 years, 15 years now, where instead of just uploading videos of a professor lecturing and following the path of everybody else over a full semester, now you're seeing all those videos are there and the student can watch them and work through the assignments, write the essays, you know, the 5, 10 page, 30 page essays, whatever's involved. They can write the essays, they can do the student community work, they can submit their assignments. All those things can be done at their schedule, meaning you can do it in a week if you want. You can do it in a few days. I mean, we know students that, you know, hardcore, maybe they already knew some of the material already. They'll work through it in 2 or 3 days. You know, if it's a subject of interest to them, maybe it's something they've already read a lot about and already know.
So I'm trying to translate this for homeschoolers and have a better way for them to kind of understand it. And let me see if I'm accurate here. So a traditional course, right? A course is taught live. Professor gets up, lectures, sort of gives it to you, feeds it to you, and you kind of go at the professor's pace, right? That'd be the same thing for a high school course. For homeschoolers, it's kind of like, here's the book, child. You know, you can go through the book as fast as you want and as fast as you can kind of absorb the information. And I think what you're saying is that there's a lot of these college courses that look more like a book, right? Like that all the content's there, the video's there, maybe the quizzes and the tests are there, the content's there, the assignments are there. And so then you can kind of eat it as fast as you can. Did I understand that correctly in terms of the way, because, you know, as a homeschool dad, that, you know, that instantly snaps in and goes, oh, okay, that makes sense to me in terms of contrast. Is that the right way to think of it?
You got it. And in fact, it actually makes a parent's job easier in that all the grading and the assignments are done by the professor. Now, this doesn't mean a parent can't be involved and can't have the students submit their papers to them first for review internally in the house. And, you know, we see a lot of that happening. But so I'm not meaning to suggest we replace the role of the parent here. But I am saying that as far as the actual credentials and the approval and the transcript and all that, it's way easier. I mean, it's not mom and dad signing a high school diploma at this point just because, you know, they say that the student's ready. You've actually got college credit on a real college transcript proving that your student has already completed that subject area.
So I take this, I say, great, we're going to combine high school and college. I'm going to use this flexibility to give my kids life experience and build skills and things like that. We combine it by saying, okay, kid, we're going to do Saxon math or whatever our math is. We're going to do our writing thing. And then you're just going to take one course. You're going to take it online, self-paced. So we have that flexibility that stays with us. And we're going to be able to do the self-paced stuff and go through it. And then, you know, through the course of a year, maybe I'm building up 30 credits that's going to transfer into college. So I'm taking it one course at a time. I'm using online courses as kind of my best option for combining this. What else is different here, Woody? You said there's a couple different things you want us to know. What else is the kind of the core, I don't know, technical stuff or core stuff I've got to understand to sort of do this in the most effective way?
Yeah, I think the last point here is really to focus on finding schools to transfer our credits into that are going to be friendly to the whole transfer credit idea. So when you're aware of the fact that there's a significant, what we call a massive disruptor in place within higher education, that in the same way the music industry was disrupted, where a few years ago you would have bought a CD if you liked a song and you advanced to the track that, you know, you liked and you put your CD on the, you know, in the player and you pulled it out. You know, we haven't touched CDs in a long time at either one of our homes.
Yeah, if students are listening to this, just a background, you know, there actually used to be music on a physical object. I know that doesn't really, and it wasn't your phone, so I know that doesn't really compute for you, but just for our younger crowd, there was actually these things that you put stuff on. So, okay.
We compact disc, exactly. And before that, there was cassettes and, you know, yeah, you could go back to records and whatever.
We don't remember those, Woody, because we're not that old yet, right? So, okay. So
what you're seeing, the equivalent of what's changed in the music industry, where it used to be a CD or before that, you know, a lot of older stuff. And, you know, it used to be inefficient where you'd have to find the right one. They go up on the shelf and you'd take them out in your car and you put them in your bike, you know, all the things we used to do. Now, today, on your phone, on Spotify, Pandora, et cetera, you can build your own playlist. You can map it out just the way you want it. You can, you know, put the songs in the right order. You can choose which songs you want to listen to. You can hit repeat, et cetera, et cetera. That is the same thing happening on the college campuses across America, where it is now possible to build your own customized, personalized degree plan. And with that knowledge, you can find certain schools that are more friendly to transfer credits, and particularly more friendly to students doing this radical approach of combining high school and college together. And you can find schools that will allow you, while you're still in high school, to earn 75% of your degree and be ready to either complete the final amount online at that school. There are a lot of online colleges. These are still state schools, still regionally accredited schools, still, you know, private schools that are well respected. They have online programs where you can finish them, or you can decide to go on site for that final year. Now, personally speaking, my recommendation is try to keep the cost and the efficiency at its maximum potential for high school. So, you know, if you got a little Susie who's 16 or 17 years old, maybe you're not ready for her to go off on a college campus. You know, maybe you think, hey, let's kind of do things more closer to home for that experience. Then I would suggest that finding a school that would allow you to earn more credit online is going to be in your favor, and it'll keep your costs down. You'll still end up with the same diploma as everybody else, you know, sit on the wall from whatever university or private school. But the way that you've gone about doing that is maximizing your efficiency. But then the thought is, hey, if you want a college experience, which I know some of the families listening in here are much more excited about than others, and I could talk a lot about that. But if you want the college experience, then go for a master's degree. Spend your money and time where it really counts. So I literally go physically on site to a master's degree and spend $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year for a master's degree where it really counts. At this point, a bachelor's degree is, everybody's got one, it's dime a dozen, but it's really, you know, students going to master's or doctorate work that are separating themselves from their peers. So my philosophy is keep your undergraduate costs low, maximize the high school, dual credit strategy, really try to get as much done in high school as you can. Then at, say, age 18, 19, go off for a master's degree when everybody else is going off for their undergrad. And by the way, the kids in the master's degree programs, average age is 27 years old. So you're going to have people that are actually serious about life. They've already done the goofing off. They drunk the alcohol. They played the sports. They partied, you know, their undergraduate away. I'm obviously making generalities here. There are notable exceptions to this. But by and large, this is exactly the truth. So you're avoiding all that. You're in classrooms with kids that actually need to study. They're like, I kind of made a mistake on my undergrad, and now I got to actually do something with my life, and I got to get a job. I'm working Starbucks or whatever for the past years because I really didn't apply myself in my undergraduate. And now they're ready to actually go learn something. They're ready to go apply themselves.
So I think if I've got this, so you're saying move from the album model to the playlist model when it comes to college, right? Instead of having to buy an album and buy a whole bunch of albums to get the whole thing, instead get a playlist and transfer it all at once. And if you're going to go for the box set, save that for the master's degree type thing and hit it there. So I mean, that's a fun analogy because I think it makes a lot of sense to a lot of people in terms of the efficiency and things like that. So the final piece here is that when you've got these courses, you've taken them and you collect them all, then look for a place that transfers them and look for a place that transfers in as much as possible. And I might just add that if you've been like, well, yeah, I don't think many colleges take transfer credits, there's a pretty enormous market force driving all but a few exceptional colleges to take transfer credits. So even schools that maybe 3 or 4 years ago when you might look for another child or you had your cousins graduated or something like that and did it, you may find that now those things have really changed because there's some really market forces driving schools to really achieve more, to take more of this transfer credit. So, okay, Woody, so I'm just going to do a kind of recap because I know we're running out of time here and kind of put this whole thing together. So the first is, you know, high school didn't always exist this way. There was a different way to look at high school and it shifted in the early part of the 1900s. And so in that shift, we kind of got some inefficiency built into the system where we've got an overlap. We've got two things happening at once. And there's a lot of forces starting to kind of combine that. And parents who are aware of it can kind of jump ahead of that curve and really do that. And they would want to do that because that gives them the flexibility and the ability to give their child a lot more skills, life experience, and those kinds of things. And if you're thinking about doing this, the first thing you need to think about is through all of high school, if possible, and certainly for the junior and senior years, think about taking each of those courses that they would take in high school and find ways to earn college credit for that. You can do it through community college, you can do it through competency-based exams. But we recommend some of the best options is to do it through self-paced online courses. And so look for those courses, look for a way to do that. Think about, you know, really focusing on one subject at a time and working through that as quickly as your student is capable of and is comfortable with. And then look finally for a place that will take those credits that you can transfer them in block in a way that allows you to kind of do a playlist education versus an album education and go for the box set when you go to the master's degree. So I think that's a pretty exciting sort of paradigm shift, and it's an exciting way to look at it differently. And Woody, I know, you know, at Unbound, look, that's what we do, right? I mean, part of the reason we have you at this conference, we want you to know about the kind of stuff that we're doing here. And certainly, if you're interested in that, you can come to Unbound. We can give you some of those assessments. We can build those degree plans for you. We can help students do that. But Woody, I thought when it comes to some of the courses that we offer the courses you would expect in terms of the general education type stuff. We've got some unique courses that really fit well into this combined high school college thing. So before we wrap this up, just give us a little taste about what are some of those self-paced courses that might be particularly appropriate for a family looking to try dipping their toe into this high school college combination thing here.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Jonathan. And as you said, this is something that we have done with thousands of students. We know how to help families navigate this whole process. And we offer a free service where we can advise you through picking the right school and knowing the transfer credit policies. We have it all mapped out. We have all the data in our system. We can produce a report for you comparing multiple schools of your interest and help you decide which school is best and how your total cost is going to be, your time to completion, and number of credits that will be transferred. We have all that data for you. And then actually building a degree plan at that school. So that's something free of charge. We'd love to help you with it. You can find out more probably somewhere on this webpage. There's a link to that. But as far as the actual courses themselves, we're really proud of the fact that we have produced a number of really high-quality, world-class subject matter expert content from people like John Stonestreet in Worldview. If you're not familiar with John Stonestreet, tremendous work with the Colson Center and the podcast Breakpoint.
President of the Colson Center, host of Breakpoint Podcast, yeah.
Yeah, we've got Dave Ramsey, who, you know, I think most people know his financial piece and, you know, the whole idea of financial stewardship and really making wise plans for that. We have his Foundations of Personal Finance course for students. We're really proud of that course. We've got the Jeff Myers Signature Leadership Courses, which is really a very special set of niche leadership content, some of the best of the best. Jeff is from Summit Ministries, and many of you in the homeschool community are probably familiar with Dr. Jeff Myers. Yeah, so, you know, there's really a ton of content there that I think fits a Christian family's worldview, a, you know, typical homeschool makeup, and a number of the gen eds as well that are available. There's just a lot of really great stuff, and we'd love to talk with you about it. And we have this set, this bundle, we call it the Foundations Bundle, where you can go through our Worldview course by John Stone Street and go through our Dave Ramsey Foundations Personal Finance. And you can also get access to our Navigate Purpose Discovery Program, where you really figure out who you are, where you're headed, and you'll have a coach guiding you through that. That's something we'd love to explain. And we think it's a great kind of kickoff for students interested in taking these ideas. And
so what do you, well, we talked about kind of putting this all together. And at some level, you know, there's a part where your head understands this, you know, and you kind of understands how it all works. But I know for me, there's always kind of like, really, does this work? And so I know you've worked with lots of students, and I wonder if you could just give us some stories as examples. I mean, one of my examples is we have a national student conference every year, and one of the years we had that national student conference, we have a graduation ceremony there for our students who finished their college degree. They actually walk at the regular college, but we recognize their achievement as well. And one of our students walked there and kind of, you know, he had already received his college degree, but that was his official graduation ceremony, got in a plane and flew home and attended his high school graduation the next day. And so he really did graduate college sort of before he graduated high school. And so he's got a fun story to tell everybody. But I know you've got stories like this too. So yeah, you told us the information here. Give us the story side of it. What is it like? Tell me something about some students have actually done this.
Yeah, when you get off the conveyor belt, you're maximizing a student's potential. You're really saying, hey, sky's the limit. Let's help you, Johnny, Susie, be the best you can be. Here's two stories I just want to share. One is Laura Lynn Whitney, a young lady from Indiana, grew up in a homeschool home. She combined high school and college, just as we described, earned her bachelor's degree by age 17, and she went off to a master's program at age 17 years old. She completed that at age 19, and she has a master's in music and also a teaching certification, and became the state of Indiana's youngest teacher at age 19. Now, it's probably not the historical youngest, but the youngest in the past, you know, 50 years, right, or something like this. But anyway, this is an example of a young lady that is living her passion, teaching music to young kids in an inner city school at age 19 years old. And, you know, I think it really speaks to the kind of potential that's available here. Alyssa is another name that comes to mind. She started at age 15. She earned a BS in psychology by the age she was 19 and graduated debt-free. She's employed as a social worker, living her degree, her purpose. She's excited about the work she's doing. And, you know, I just think about those are the kinds of stories that we want to see more of. We want to see young people that are, you know, being fully engaged and living their passion and, you know, doing what God's called them to do. That's really what drives us here at Unbound. And I know that's a lot of the message of student life and the work you've been about for these past many years, Jonathan. So it's been a fun session with you, Jonathan. I know we're at our time, but thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, well, it's great to have your expertise share your expertise with us, Woody. And so we really appreciate that. But you know, as we wrap this up, if we have anything to just kind of leave you with, is we just want you to really have that pattern interrupt, really have that sort of interruption and go, wait a second, there's a different way to think about this. Wasn't always done this way. There's a lot of potential and opportunities if we do it differently. And there's a way to do it. And we'd like you to know, of course, there's people out there that can help you do that. And we'd be delighted to walk alongside you in the process. So thanks very much for your attention. And we look forward to maybe work with you in the future. But more than that, we look forward to the kind of success and the kind of opportunities that your students and you might have as you think about and take charge of the education for you and for your students.
Hi, I'm Woody from Lumerit Education. If your student's in high school preparing for college, I highly recommend that you check out our Unbound Foundations program. This program helps students ensure that they have a solid understanding of worldview as well as personal student finance before they enroll in college. The first course they'll take is a Foundations of Personal Finance course taught by Dave Ramsey.
The number one reason college students drop out of school is money problems. I'm Dave Ramsey, and I want to welcome you to the most important class you'll ever take.
Then they'll gain confidence in their beliefs by understanding how worldviews contrast with one another and looking at it from a biblical perspective through the John Stone Street Comparative Worldviews course.
That the age of information is actually an age of ideas, because information isn't neutral. Information contains and embodies and argues and assumes ideas.
On top of that, both of these courses are worth 3 college credits apiece. So your student's going to earn 6 college credits for this experience. And add to that, students go through our award-winning Navigate Purpose Discovery program.
2 things are important about you and about your life: who you are and what you do.
The best part, these credits transfer directly into your student's college or university, and they also count for high school dual credit. With Foundations, we pulled together some of the best dual credit content, packaged it together so your student can get a great start on college.